Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the co-founder CEO of Atom Ventures, and I'm here with Phil Pallucha from the Billionaires and Boxers podcast. Say hello, Phil.
Hello, how are you doing?
So I think we're going to have a lot to talk about here, really. I mean, we're just chatting before we've gone on air, and it seems like there's a lot of topics to cover. I guess the three main things we should go through is a bit like personal growth, because that's an area that you guys are focused on.
Yep.
Your podcast and personal brand and creating podcasts, and then entrepreneurship.
Yes.
I think that's another topic you're very passionate about, and
very much so.
I don't like the word passion, but I think after people listen to this, they'll understand that really is a word that describes you and what you love. First things first, though, can you give people a bit of background about yourself and how you came to start and co-host Billionaires in Boxers?
Yeah, sure. So Billionaires in Boxers was originally a podcast of a different name. It was a podcast that I used to generate business for a recruitment business I owned and a marketing business I owned, mostly because I wasn't smart enough to get my head around digital marketing and I hated cold calling. I hated it when people did it to me, so I sure as hell didn't want to do it to anybody else. So I started podcasting. It was something I'd done in a completely different world.
How long ago was this, by the way?
So how many years ago? 5-6 years ago, like that. So I'd been podcasting just before. So I'd been in sport, and then I was a half decent football player, or at least so I thought. I kept getting injured. I kept damaging my shin bone. So I kind of got like medically retired at the age of 20, which sucked. And I started coaching. So I was playing in Hungary at the time, and I just carried on coaching for the club that I was with. I went to their academy level and started coaching and went through rehab and stuff. And it was cool. I loved it. I loved coaching. I loved the kids. It was awesome. But it's not the same. I mean, you don't get the same excitement. You don't get the same buzz as you do as the player. I can promise you the money isn't the same. and it was like, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life? And I think it was like minus 21 degrees. I'm stood wearing a coat, hat, watching the kids play on this frozen pitch. It's been dark since about 3 p.m. And I'm just thinking, I don't want to do this anymore.
Fair enough.
And I got out of it and I started going into business. I went and did a couple of degrees, as you do, because I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I did a law degree and a surveying degree, and I've used neither ever, as you do, just collecting them. But I had no idea what I wanted to do, because my idea had always been I was going to be a footballer, and then I was probably going to be a manager. You know, I was living the dream, and then suddenly it was gone. But one of the things that was happening at the time was fans were just starting to kind of rival the content of the mainstream channels. So fans were starting to set up their own podcasts, their own channels. I mean, like nowadays, people will think of like Arsenal Fan TV or Redmen TV or these kind of guys. You know, they were just kind of starting. Like, people were just starting to do this. People were doing it from their back bedroom or the shed outside and stuff. And it was just starting to come together. So as a young fan who loved the game and had also kind of been on the other side, because I played and I coached a bit, I kept getting invited onto podcasts. I loved them. Loads of fun. You get to meet some awesome people all around the world. It was dead easy because we all had the same shared passion, which was football at the time. And I loved it. And then I started to get paid for it. So I grew and sold 2 podcast channels, which I really enjoyed. And I was like, this is pretty cool. I like this. And then I decided, I wonder if I can combine this for business. Like, I wonder if I can use the same philosophy with the podcast and do it for business development, which was at the time, it was an issue in my business, because I didn't know the best way to do it, because I didn't want to bother people with it. But I also knew I had something that if they knew about, it would be really helpful to them. So the funny thing was, fast forward a couple of years and nobody gives a shit about my recruitment business or my marketing business. Everybody wants to know how I did it with the podcast. Everybody wants to know, you know, how did you get to that ranking? How did you get the guests that you do? How did you get that sponsor? How did you get to speak at that event?
So just to chip in there. So you and I discussed this before the podcast that you're on the top 100 podcasters, right? So can you give people who've never heard of you before? Because there might be a few people who've not heard of you before. A little flavor.
I expect that.
Yeah. Like, so, how did you get on the top 100 list of podcasters?
Well, good question. So
who do you interview as well?
Right? Well, so at the moment, we interview a lot of personal development coaches. So if you've ever seen the movie The Secret, or you've read, you know, probably read the book, I imagine most people have. Most of the guys in the movies and the prequels, you know, we manage a lot of their live events exclusively across Africa. We're creating a number of movies with them. They're good friends of them. Many of them are actually mentors of mine. So they come on the show, and they're very passionate about empowering people as well, especially emerging markets. So Africa is a great example, and having worked across Africa a lot, I have a real love for the continent. My wife is South African. My children are dual nationality, and you know, I love that place. I love it. Has its problems, but I adore it. I want Africa to do well, and the next 10 years worth of technological advancements are going to come out of Africa, because the thing that's been holding Africa back has been connectivity, and that's no longer the issue. It's getting better every single day. And they say that necessity is the mother of all invention. Well, there's a hell of a lot of problems across Africa that can now be solved with technology, and now they have the playing ground to do it in. So I'm excited, and I want to play my part in fueling that. And one of the best ways that I know to do that isn't to try and be some weird messiah that's like, hey, listen to me, I know what I'm doing. I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. My job is, for some reason, these really motivational and inspirational people seem to like me, and they've resonated with what I'm doing. So my gift is to introduce them to as many people as humanly possible, because they are the people that have the power to inspire people and help people. And my focus is on, the more I learn, the more I can teach other people, and that's my focus.
So I guess, well, again, there's a lot coming out of that. So where did you start? Like, well, so once, you know, you obviously, you know, you've given the background of the couple of podcast channels that you sold before, but then you're moving into an entirely new world, I guess, right?
So
a completely new world, and you're starting from scratch. Because I guess one of the question I have around you selling a podcast channel is that surely podcast channel is you, right?
And good question. Yeah.
So how do you, I can understand you can sell the numbers, the people, the listeners, but then surely the content and the vibe and feel and everything of that is you.
Well, no, I'd actually phased myself out of the shows entirely. I think I was kind of guesting on maybe one show a week, and there was four or five being created a week consistently that had their own fan base. There was a girls podcast, which was the Soccer Ladies, and they would just talk about football. It was a female podcast for females, loosely football related, but it used to go all over the place. You'd have after match reaction shows where it was just a normal couple of presenters who would be presenting immediately after the game, so you can soak up the atmosphere and the environment. So no, I mean, what I'd grown essentially was a podcast network rather than a podcast show. So it may have started out as one show, but it was a case of, well, there's other things that people can bring to the table. And then it almost sounds like a strange thing to say, but it almost felt quite arrogant to want to be involved in every show. It's like, I don't need to be in every show, sure. You know? It's like Jamie Carragher is not on every program they have in Sky Sports. It's like, well, now we're going to talk about golf and here's Jamie Carragher. It's like, no, it would lose its effect, and you'd think that Carragher was desperate for a paycheck. And it was the same thing with me. Like I heard shows where the co-presenters would have such an amazing relationship. I didn't want to mess with that. That was amazing. Like, why would I go and insert myself into something that was already brilliant?
So then, as you were phased out of that, you decided that this is the next step. So you were kind of essentially starting from scratch, because it's a completely new audience, right? Something you don't even know, as you mentioned, like you don't know much about, but you
decided
to go. So how did you start that? Because the reason I ask is that since I've been doing podcasts, and I know this is obviously something must have happened to you a lot, is that people are just asking, how do you do the podcast? How do you start?
Yeah.
I'm very similar to you. I mean, I started off basically not wanting to write blogs and not wanting to do, you know, the social media posts. And I thought, well, I know a bunch of interesting people. Why don't I interview them and see what we can get out of it? But it was quite simple in that sense. I just went to the first person I know and say, oh, you do something quite interesting. You want to talk about it? And they said, yeah, I'd love to.
Yep.
But for you, and you're getting into this kind of growth coaching, that area, you know, how did you start? And for me, when I look at coaches, there's so many out there. And I've done I've done podcasts on how you find a good coach. How do you know that person is actually any good at what they do? So how did you pick that first set of people? And like, how were your early days? I mean, how was it to kind of build up that momentum and audience again?
Yeah, so I think it's funny. I used a lesson that I'd learned in the world of sport. And in fact, I learned a lot of lessons from sport. But two of the main lessons I learned that kind of fueled what you're asking about was, one was, whenever you played against a local team that was filled full of local players, you used to dominate them if you turned up with a team that had cherry-picked the best players from around the world. So my attitude was always global beats local. So whenever I grew a business, it was with global in mind. I wasn't just going to work London. That makes no sense. There's like 25,000 other recruitment agents in London. It makes no sense for me to compete with that many people. Where is there less people? Where is there a demand for what I need? Right, well, it's in LA or... actually, it was in Texas at the time. It was in Houston. It was like, fine, I'll just do that then. and it never affected me. And the other thing that I learned was they all looked out for each other in that community, especially in the sports community, because it's like it's a tough world. You know, it's not it's a hard slog when you're trying to break through. Then when you do break through, that brings a whole different set of challenges again, and people prying into your personal life, and it becomes difficult. Like even I never got to this stage, but I have friends that made it to the highest level, and they say to me, like, you know, you have to be careful with like who your mates are, because even people that were friends with you years ago now suddenly want something out of your pocket and are manipulating you, or will sell a story to the press, and it's like horrible. So what you do is you keep a network of the people you're close with and the friends that you've played with at different clubs and coaches you've trained with. And you ask for help. There's nothing wrong with messaging somebody saying, hey, listen, I'm trying to do this. Does anybody know anybody? It's like, yeah, I do. I'll recommend you this guy. And a recommendation is the strongest thing you can ever have. So getting the podcast was relatively easy, because I targeted, let's say, 10 people that I really wanted on the podcast. Now, I had to be realistic about who these people were. Like, I would have loved to have interviewed Tony Robbins and, you know, these kind of guys. But, like... hey, Tony, I've got no listeners and I'm just starting a podcast, you know, you want to come?
But yeah, ironically, I reckon people do, right? I think that's the funny thing. I think this podcast community, because we met on matchmaker.fm, to give a shout out to those guys, I guess.
Yeah, amazing work they do.
But, you know, I'm surprised that people are coming to me and asking me on the podcast, and I'm like, wow, you know, you're pretty big. How does that
work? But it's awesome, isn't it? Because everybody, I think, at that level realizes that you can learn something from everybody's journey, and you never know who's going to have the key to unlock the next door for you or the next bit. Or, you know, I was saying this to you off air, like Billionaires in Boxers started off as my idea, and it's not my idea anymore. It's this huge living organism that just seems to grow every single day, that I just kind of feel fortunate enough to try and manage somehow and steer in the right direction.
So what's the size? I mean, what's your audience? How many people do you reach, and where are they all? I know Africa's your key here.
Yeah, so we go across 14 million homes across Southern Africa at the moment, which is pretty cool. Podcast. Yeah, it's all right, isn't it? Podcast then goes out far and wide. In fact, the podcast has only just started to be re-released again, because ironically, the podcast had become a radio show, which then became a TV show. Now, this shows how recent all this stuff is. So we'd had a studio made for us in Cape Town, and we were going down to go and start recording. And I was supposed to leave 2 weeks after lockdown happened. So I'm still here in the UK. I'm supposed to be in Cape Town, but although there's a cold front there at the minute, so I'm kind of glad I'm not there.
Nice.
Although I do love that city, so maybe I'd put up with the cold. Who knows? But yeah, we said, well, what are we going to do? Are we just going to wait? I was like, no, listen. This content is about helping people, and it's about empowering people, and it's about saying no matter what the circumstances, you can work through it. How can we say that message but wait 4 weeks because we can't show you this right now because we're at home? It's like, no, nonsense. We'll just do a show via Skype and people will understand that that's why we're doing it the way we do it. We're still trying to help and bring useful content. But people started saying, like, I missed your podcast. You know, I used to really enjoy listening to the podcast, and I was like, yeah, we really need to bring that out. So the podcast is actually, by and large, not always, but by and large, it's the audio from the TV show.
Right.
But the TV show tends to not be very visual anyway, in terms of nobody's really drawing on whiteboards and doing things very often. We try and keep it as audible friendly as possible. But it was simple. You make a list of the 10 people I wanted to speak to that I thought I had a chance of getting on a show. And I messaged them and just asked, you know, found email addresses for them or LinkedIn messaged them. And I'd say, listen, your story looks amazing. I am much further behind you on this ladder, but I'm pretty sure I could learn a lot of things from you, and so could my listeners. Would you be able to spare me sort of 60 minutes of your time to talk about your story and what you're doing as a business? I mean, most people said yes, to be honest. I mean, some people kind of came back and were like, I'm not interested in the podcast. And it's like, that's fine. And I would, you know, some people get arsy when people said that. I would see that as an opportunity. That's fine. If that person's an introvert, it would be a terrible interview anyway. I don't want to be dragging words out of them. So instead of trying to convince them to come on a show when they don't want to, I'd say, listen, no problem. Maybe there's somebody else in your business that you could get to do it for you. You know, everyone loves a chatterbox. Who have you got in there that loves a good talk? And failing that, who else do you know that I should speak to that might be interested? Just because they're not interested in coming on a podcast doesn't mean they're not going to introduce you to other people that will.
It's interesting you say that, because I remember, I mean, so far I've not had really many problems trying to get people on board, because I find, you know, once people, you ask them, do you want to tell a story or do you want to tell your story, everyone loves to talk about themselves to some degree. There's only one person who I've ever come across that asked me, you know, what's your audience reach? And they were trying to start a new business. So they were launching a new business and they said, what's your audience reach? You know, what's your demographic? This, that, and the other. And I said, you know, it's this. But I also said to him, you know, that even if it's five, that's five more people hearing what you're doing rather than anyone else. But he didn't get it. You know, he was all up for only doing it if you've got like hundreds of listeners across, I don't know, 20 different countries, which is fine. But, you know, it's the attitude that to me strikes. It's one of those, well, okay, to get onto this topic, a lot of what you talked about was around entrepreneurship, right? So, you know, you collaborate to get off the ground. You need to collaborate. You need to go speak to people who've done it before, find out how they've done it, and then grow that network. And it's like you do with any business. And I think when I was talking to this person who wasn't interested in talking to me, it was that mindset that, you know, if I'm not making $100, I don't want to make a dollar.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's, I think,
one of the
biggest problems that you see in business is that, well, no, a dollar is more than you had before, right?
I think it was also the expectation of what they wanted from that call. So I think some of the biggest and best business opportunities that have ever presented themselves to me, many of which I'm involved with today, came about because I didn't have any preconceptions of the call. I knew there was probably some opportunities there. I didn't know what they were. Because, I mean, imagine if I'd have gone in thinking, oh, do you know what? I'll give you a real life example. I'm sure he won't mind. One of my mentors is Dr. Travis Fox. He is ranked as one of the world's, I think he is the world's leading passive income coach. Now, he knows loads of people, right? He knows the fact. He's like the mentor for the founders of Walmart and Stone Hallmark and all these kind of people. Like, he's brilliant. He loved it. I love this guy. He's amazing, right? Has this entire academy of these coaches, these trainees. Like, he's making an army of these amazing people. Now, if I'd have gone into him thinking, do you know what? He's going to know loads of people that will be interested in buying sponsorship for my content, which he will, and he does. And that's what I'm going to focus on. So I'm going into this call with the focus of I'm going to sell him sponsorship or get him to sell sponsorship to other people. I'd have completely missed what actually happened. So what really happened in that call was I went on and said, I really enjoyed being on the podcast with you. I meant what I said about whether you'd mentor me, which he very kindly agreed he would. And then I said, there's so much synergy between us. There's got to be something there. And he was like, no, I agree. And this is what I've got. And then we kind of just batted back and forth. And I was like, well, this is my dream. And he's like, that's funny because this is my dream. And there was a lot of crossover. And it was like, right, so where are you with yours? And I was like, well, I've got this, this, and this, and I'm trying to plug in this, this, and this. And he's like, awesome, I know this publicist, I know this person, I know this person, and let me get you this list full of 10 guests, away we go. And it was like, it's like business on steroids. How many years would it have taken me to build that?
It would be impossible, right? Because you wouldn't be looking for it.
Precisely. I mean, even if I managed to stumble across it, would it take a lifetime? I mean, that's his lifetime's work. That's why he's at that place.
But I think what you've touched on there, right, is a bit of lateral thinking. And that's what I think is missing in a lot of people that I come across, especially when it comes to business and entrepreneurship. A lot of it is to do with maybe cultural issues sometimes it's education or whatever it is. But I've met so many people that once they go forwards, they hit a stone in the road and that's it. They stop.
Yeah,
they don't think about how you get around it, or actually they don't see connections in or the links between the things that they want in general and what is there in front of them, if you see what I mean. So, you know, you'll go to the shop to the butchers to buy meat, right? And you'll go out and bring it. But then you might have a conversation with him and he might tell you about something else that's going on around the corner. And then, oh, suddenly that's something new that's come up. And people don't tend to do that. They'll just go in, buy the meat and go away, right? They won't actually evolve.
Which I think is really foolish, because everyone has their own network, and that's how you grow these things. I mean, that's the beauty of podcasting, is like, I'll bring my audience, you bring yours, we have an interesting conversation, learn things from each other, our audiences learn things, some of my guys are liking what you're doing and going to stick around with your content, some of your audience like what we're doing and stick around with ours. That's the joy of it. I mean, that, but you can do that in any form of business. It's just really simple to look at it in podcasting. So I used to be a really sort of stressed out person. In fact, as a manager, I was probably the worst. Like, I was a real micromanager, because I was a perfectionist, and I had such a high standard of myself that I'd expect that of everybody else. And one of the things that I really had to learn, partly due to the fact that, you know, I had a mini heart attack in my 30s, in my, you know, early 30s, it was I need to chill the hell out. And one of the ways that I actually found that the success started to come, and things started to fit and work, and I was meeting all these incredible people and everything was just really in flow, was when I didn't force anything. I was just kind of not going with the flow. That's definitely not the right way of wording it, but like, not deliberately swimming against the tide. Like, if something felt difficult and tiring, I don't do it. Even to the point where it's like, I'll give you an example. There's a film out at the moment. There's about 10 coaches in this film, and about 7 or 8 of them have messaged me to get booked in, and which is mental on its own. These are like best-selling authors and experts at what they do, and they're messaging me going, hey, can I come on the show? It's like, yeah, of course you can. I mean, what a ridiculous question. But there's one person who sent, I won't name them, but they sent me a thing, and their team sent me like a form, and it's like a 15-page form, dude.
Yeah.
And the questions are like, what's the airing date? When's the replay date? What's the channel frequency decoder of when it goes out? Where will clips be used? Who are the companies advertising during the breaks? Who's sponsoring the show? And I'm like, oh my days, why is any of this relevant? And I've looked at it 3 times so far and I've not responded. And I don't think I'm going to.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, essentially, in what they're saying there is that their time's more valuable than yours, right?
Yeah,
that's essentially what that comes down to. And there's no point in that, right?
No,
you're providing the service here.
Precisely, and it's a huge value add. And the irony is, and I was saying this about the 10 people before. I used to find it was about 50-50, right? I'd ask 10 people, half of them would say yes, and the other half would either say no or ignore me, right? But the really funny thing was, if you've made a list of the top 10 people in a particular market, they all know each other, yeah. Right? So what ends up happening is, so you want to speak to, you know, Warren Buffett, right? And Warren Buffett's completely ignoring you. He's having none of it. He's not interested, right? Probably hasn't even seen your email, okay? Because he's got a team of people to stop him seeing your email. So you don't get a response and you think, screw Warren Buffett. All right, and you go and speak to 5 other experts instead, and you're speaking to the guys on Wall Street, and you're speaking to these experts, and you say, listen, I've had a great time with you here. And they're like, yeah, me too. I really resonate with you. And you go, who else do you know that I should speak to? Have you spoken to Warren yet? No. Let me create a WhatsApp group, and I'll make it happen. Now you get him. That's how it works. And there's no great secret or mystery to it. That's the formula. That's all we do, and it works a treat.
But again, going back to business, right? What seems very natural to you and me because we are those personalities is not very natural to a lot of people. So I guess the question then becomes is that if you aren't that person to easily make that outreach and easily make those connections, you know, what can you do? How can you overcome not necessarily those fears, but that, I guess, there's not the inability
Yeah, it depends what you want to do. I mean, I'd say there's probably 2 answers to that. Number one is you can always learn to create content. You can always, you know, even introverts, if they're passionate about their business and passionate about what they do, will have a conversation. But the great thing is you don't have to interview extroverts all the time if you're an introvert. Go and find other introverts that would probably be quite uncomfortable in other people's podcasts. Mine, for example, I'm a loud guy. I talk at like 1,000,000 miles an hour. You know, I'd scare the crap out of some people if they really didn't like, you know, they were quite shy and they didn't really like kind of broadcasting themselves. I'd be the worst kind of host for that person. Somebody else that's softly spoken and going through their own personal journey to say, I can't even believe I'm creating a podcast right now. You know, 12 months ago, I refused to answer the phone to people because I didn't like talking to people without knowing what was going to be said. Like, people will resonate with that. But let's just say you really can't. You really are not in a place right now that you can go there, right? And that's okay. I'm not going to make any judgment on anybody. You don't have to. I just said to you before, like, I sold two channels that just had other people doing shows. You can always be the inspiration behind something. You don't have to be the voice that they hear. You know, most of the programs we watch on TV, the people who wrote the story and creative produced it, they're not in the show. You don't see them. You see their name at the end. They get actors and other people that can portray the role far better than they can to do it. So why is podcasting any different?
Yeah, and I think you're touching upon a point that I kind of believe in quite strongly, is that you work towards your strengths, right? You don't 100%. Try. So you don't really sit, because a lot of people that you improve their weaknesses, so they make themselves kind of even. But that's not.
Yeah,
really,
I don't do that. Yeah, and I don't think there's any point in doing that. And I firmly agree with you there. So for me, I think the greatest strength you have is knowing your strengths and weaknesses, because if you can, there's no point surrounding myself with people that can do what I do. I'm really good at what I do. That's pointless. I need to surround myself with people who are really good and want to do the bits that I'm not so good at. That's how you make something great. And what you often find is the people that are really good at those bits aren't really good at your bits. So they're grateful for you. And now what you've got is this, would you rather have like 100% of like 100,000, or would you rather have 25% of 25 million? Because it's that kind of thing. It's that you can slog away and do all of this yourself, or you can team up with four or five other really kick-ass people, possibly even globally, and create this great big global empire at the same time, and with the same effort you could have grown that small little local business.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that is important about that is if you've got multiple people working together with different strengths, that brings your diversity, right? And your diversity 100%. At least. And that's where that will come. That's where you grow stronger as an organization, because it's an organization, right? Well, I guess football is quite individual, but it's still a team. So
yeah, of course it is, yeah. I mean, no player has ever won something by themselves. You have to rely on your teammates. I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan, so I think back to like the Gerrard final and think Steven Gerrard was practically Liverpool for a number of years. But ultimately, he didn't save all the penalties. He didn't cross all the balls. You know, even though he stood out in that team, he still had to have his teammates around him to win. And I see business as no different. You know, maybe that's a good way of looking at it. I'm so used to team sports. Like, I don't want to do it on my own. It's fun with a team.
Yeah, I mean, have you been watching the Last Dance?
I haven't even started it yet, unfortunately.
It's an interesting one to watch. I think that's, again, it kind of echoes a lot of what you're saying there. One thing I want to touch on, because before, I'm not saying that we're ending the podcast, but definitely one area I want to make sure that we touch on, and that's African. Your work in Africa, South Africa, yeah. I guess, start with. Now, Africa is obviously a huge continent, right? It's not.
Yeah, massive.
Can't
1.3 billion people.
So what are you seeing out there? So you mentioned, obviously, there's technology is. Connectivity has improved, so technology is improving, and the solutions are there to help people through the basic needs, I guess. What are you seeing as the main trends? Like, what are you seeing from the entrepreneurship going on out there? Because I've been talking to people in Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania, Kenya, right? And so I know like Rwanda is like a Singapore version of
Rwanda's amazing.
And people are very much, it's a very easy place to do business, and you know, there's a lot of interesting ideas coming out of them. What are you seeing? Like, what's your perspective on it? Where, you know, you said it's a few years behind, but it's going to accelerate. Like, what's expensive? What different parts of Africa? How are they all kind of interacting together?
So it's a very good question. So Africa is okay. Let me do it this way. I'm just thinking. I mean, this is a huge question.
It's not. That's why.
And I also don't want to kind of disrespect you by giving you a throwaway answer either. It's funny that you mentioned Rwanda. So a percentage of all of our profits go to African charities, particularly entrepreneurial empowerment charities. And one of the main ones we work with is based in Rwanda, called the African Entrepreneur Collective. And they actually specialize in funding refugee entrepreneurs across Rwanda. I mean, the stuff they're doing there is ridiculous. They have like a 95% success rate. They're linked internationally. They're doing more and more work with the states. The government have got involved at like the highest levels to try and help with this. And I really, really admire what they're doing. I love what they're doing. Uganda is another one you mentioned. We've actually just signed up with a new TV station in Uganda today. So we're going to be in Kampala on a business network there. So that's pretty awesome. I know Southern Africa better. My wife is from South Africa. I have friends from Zambia and Zimbabwe that I've done a lot of work with as well. Look, let me tell you where Africa's at. from my perspective. Now, many people may disagree, but I'll tell you how I see it. It's a hard place to make a living. It's a hard place to work. There's no handouts. It's not like the UK where you can just go and sign on for a bit and get some money or get a government grant that's like interest-free to go to university. That doesn't exist. Like, education is still very much seen as a privilege, and it is a privilege. And I think some people really take advantage of that, and other people are trapped by the paradigms that other people have told them. You know, the whole Africa's poor, Africa, you know, Africans are this, Africans are this. And I think there are people that still have that mindset, which is really heartbreaking because it's almost self-imposed now. It's like the international community shit on Africa, and then Africans have kind of taken that on themselves and gone, well, if they're shitting on us, it must be because we should be shit on. We must be shit. And it's heartbreaking. I mean, you see that a lot with the youth across Africa in particular. And it's really heartbreaking because they just feel so disenfranchised and so disconnected from what's happening. And what's incredible about that is they don't realize that they're on the cusp of something amazing that's going to be able to change their life, which is the thing that's been holding Africa back as a continent for so long has been connectivity. Now, China have invested like $5.5 billion in connectivity across Africa. You know, villages that were completely off the grid like 2-3 years ago now have 50, 60 meg fiber optic lines. I mean, that's going to change the way they do business. Well, exactly. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, in fact, my co-host who's in Johannesburg, he gets better, faster, quicker internet than I do, and it's cheaper. And I'm with like Sky and have the fiber, and it's mental. It's ridiculous. But I also love them for it, right? So they say that necessity is the mother of invention, right? Well, the West is lazy. If Amazon's an hour late with our stuff that we ordered half an hour ago, we get frustrated. You know, we've become, you know, just eat, get food, click, 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 guy brings it to the door. How lazy are we? It's not even the takeaway thing. We've not even had that bit of exercise. We get to go to the kitchen and go to the drawer, you know, when we get out the menu and then we ring them. We're not even having that bit of exercise anymore. We're just sitting on our ass ordering takeaway.
You've touched you've touched on a point that I find really, and I say this to a lot of people, like, say my nephews or little cousins, is that, you know, here we worry about certain things that are just of no interest to people in China or India, you know, and you've got 100%. 2.5 billion people out there who are hungry and they want to succeed and they want to get from where they are to somewhere better. And their hunger is going to devour you here if you just
100%. And you're not wrong, and that's exactly what we're doing with Africa. That's what the empowerment piece is about. We were talking before about it looks like Billionaires in Boxes is going to be opening up in India as well, and it's the same thing. It's about empowering hungry people that have that appetite to succeed and want to progress. I mean, they want to learn, they want to do well, and our gift is just introducing them to people that can make that a possibility reality. It's showing them how to create podcasts that can connect them with the world and give them a platform that they can engage with customers, partners, whoever they want, wherever they want, and in such a natural way. And I love it. But let me give you an idea about where Africa's at, because I imagine India's probably not too dissimilar, to be honest. I mean, we're doing more research on it at the moment. But there's two stats that I always think are really fascinating. Number one is that Africa's podcast scene at the moment is currently at the same stage the United States was in 2003. Okay, so that's like 17, 18 years worth of growth. That's pretty amazing on its own. But when you consider that the number of podcasters in Africa doubled last year, that tells you that people are starting to wake up to this, and it's not going to be very long. So the irony is we mentor loads of clients across North America, and every time they open up a podcast, usually for their business or for their personal brand, they have competitors at least in the tens, if not the hundreds, every time, right? All at the same level, because they all know the same stuff now. When that happens in Africa, if you've got one or two competitors, I'll be surprised. And even if you do, they're performing at that level that's 17, 18 years behind that of the US, which is where we're producing most of our stuff. So if I can teach you what they know, you're 17, 18 years ahead of your competition.
Yeah, for sure. So when you say 17, 18 years, what is that? What has changed over the last 17, 18 years? What
are the difference? Everything. So there wasn't any software to really do it. I mean, I remember when I first started podcasting, it wasn't 17, 18 years ago, but wow. I mean, we would record on Skype, and Skype would drop out 3 or 4 times. Nobody had a proper microphone. So even if you were doing it, most people were doing it through the microphone in their laptop. It was really annoying because people would forget to plug headphones in. So you'd have the echo back from other people. I mean, some of this stuff was completely unusable. You'd have to edit and stitch it all together, and some people would be sending you individual audio files that you've then got to try and overlay, and it's before you knew how to do a clap edit point and all this kind of juicy stuff. I mean, there's an app at the moment called Bouncecast, right? I love, I'm giving them a plug, right? But oh my days, where was that 10 years ago? It's essentially this tool that you can record with or upload to, and it's AI-based audio clarity. It's cleaning up the audio, removes the background noise, gets rid of the pops, just produces this amazing sounding thing. And it's like, oh, that would have literally taken me like 3 hours of editing back in the day. You know, you used to be loving having a conversation with somebody and really wanting them to stop talking at the same time so that you didn't have to edit even more of the show.
yeah, I know what you mean. So then
you'd have to host it somewhere that wasn't really fit for it. So you'd kind of be using SoundCloud or Podbean. I don't know if you remember Podbean. Podbean was one of the first ones that started to come out that was specifically for podcasts. But it was really poor. I mean, it rarely worked. It didn't do what it was supposed to do. I don't know. It was too buggy. It wasn't ready. But it's like anything. I mean, if you're gonna drive something forward and be one of the first to do something, you get the benefits of being first. One of my mentors said, you know, that when the public hear about something, it's usually when the money's gone from it, because the people who are in that inner circle that hear about it before everybody else, they're the people who then make their money from anything, whether it's a service, a business offering, whatever. The money's already been made, and then the scraps for everybody else to do it. Well, if you're going to want to be one of those people to be first to something, that sounds great. And yes, it comes with some reward, but it also comes with some responsibility, which is you've got a responsibility to help build this thing. If you're going to be one of the first people, it's not built yet. Help me build it. Otherwise, I'll build it and then you can pay me to use it.
Hmm. Okay, cool. One of the questions I have around Africa now, so I guess we're going to go back to the entrepreneurship bit because we digressed a little bit. So are you seeing a lot of influx, a lot of business owners coming from, you know, Western educated schools coming back in? Or are you seeing is coming organically out of the universities there?
Well, I think it's interesting. The universities are doing a good job, but I guess they can only teach what they know. And right now they don't have incredible connections with the rest of the world and relationships, so they can't teach it. It's like Mandela said, it's everything seems impossible until it's done. Well, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's, you know, you show them how it can all link with the rest of the world. Now, the fun thing is, this is a true story, because Africa's been battered, and now I'm not the best person to talk about that. I'm going to sit here as a white British guy and talk about what Africa's been through. That's ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't even insult the subject by going there. But what it has led to as a byproduct is, I think, out of everywhere I've ever been in the world, Africa's the most cynical. If it sounds too good to be true, it's because it's bollocks. It's kind of their attitude. Right. And that it's like that as a continent. Like, people are very cautious. And I understand that. I fully understand that. But what that means is that you can have the best pitch in the world. You can have the best product in the world. If you've not been recommended to them, or somebody that they know, like, or trust is using you or be seen to be using or pushing that service, good luck, because that's still how business is done, and I love that that's how business is done, because it fits into our whole global networking thing. So we have people that we know, like, and trust across Africa who are known, liked, and trusted. We introduce them to equally credible people across the United States or across Asia or wherever. And we say, let's have a conversation. We always say, like, amazing things happen when you put amazing people in a room together. It's literally that simple. Let's jump on a 4-way Zoom call and see what happens. And some of the best things we've ever done have come out of that.
I think a lot of what you said there is, it's not just, you know, relevant for Africa, but I think anywhere you go around the world, it is you know, introductions, personal introductions trump anything else that you can do. So we didn't really get too deeply into this in the previous answer, but what are the differences you've seen between East and West and South? And I get, well, North's a little bit, and North as well, if you know much about
Well, Africa or the world?
Africa. From like a, let's say, an entrepreneur standpoint. Are there places, okay, we say like Rwanda, East Africa's probably further down the path. But about how about places like Nigeria, and then you've got, you know.
So do you know what? They're doing well, but I think one of the saddest things for me for Africa is, whilst there are people doing sort of personal development and professional development coaches, and there are coaches out there that are very good, they're not internationally recognized and they're not widely known. So Africans still find themselves looking for empowerment, both in terms of entrepreneurial and personal growth, from overseas coaches, overseas movies, overseas courses, all this kind of stuff, which I think is sad, because it's giving the subconscious message that you need to look away from Africa for answers. And I don't think that's true. I think Africa has everything she needs. So in terms of North Africa, I mean, look, they're far closely linked to the Middle East. The Middle East tend to do a lot with North Africa. Little bits of Europe, but I'd say the Middle East kind of take care of them. Central Africa, as we've said, there's more starting to be done. There's a lot of charities. I mean, there's amazing stuff going on within Rwanda, as you know, and Uganda as well now. There's some cool stuff happening there. But it hasn't lit yet, you know what I mean? Like, tipping point hasn't happened. It's like you can feel the excitement, but it's not happened yet. It's coming. It's like it's tangibly close, but that tipping point hasn't happened yet. It's like it hasn't clicked, but it will. And I think it hasn't clicked because of coronavirus, if I'm completely honest. I think it's probably that close. I think it was, if business was back to normal, this would happen. But I think what this has done has, it's shown Africa, and actually I've been told by some of my Indian colleagues as well, that it showed India that the whole world has just been dragged down onto its ass over this virus. Everybody was dealing with the same stuff at the same time. We were all as vulnerable. It was a scary time for everybody. And I think what that did for a lot of people was it showed them some humility, as we've seen from a lot of videos. It was kind of a, you know, we're all in this together. Like, we're all, doesn't matter what color, what race, what nationality, we're all going through the same stuff. And I think some people got that from it. I think entrepreneurs realized that actually there's a real opportunity here, that many of the biggest and most successful businesses out there were on their knees because they couldn't get into the office and they couldn't work. And anyone with that creative spark inside them was going, how do you solve that problem?
I think the whole all in it together, for me, it was quite hollow when you're looking at larger corporations. So, I mean, I work very heavily in small businesses and startups, right? And I think there at that level, definitely everyone's in it together. There are, the amount of support networks that sprung up for small businesses and entrepreneurs was amazing. And it was great to see, even locally, like where I live and in London, lots and lots of people were doing things to help anyone who was in trouble. But when you look at the larger corporates and the banks, I mean, the banks have been horrendous throughout this whole process anyway, right? But look at the large corporates. You know, there are so many small businesses here that got hosed because large corporate said, we're not going to pay you, or we're going to pay you in 5% and we're going to pay you in a year's time. So there was definitely none of this. They were not in it together with us.
I had some of those same things. So one of the clients who owed me an invoice went into administration, so I got nothing. And then, I had the same problem. So I was looking at the whole bounce back thing and I thought, well, that'd be useful, some cash to inject into this while some of the stuff's fallen off a cliff. But I didn't bank with any of the banks that were chosen. I have an online fintech bank because I trade internationally, so I need virtual cards and stuff. So they mainly chose high street banks and a handful of the smaller fintechs, but as they should, they took care of their customers first. So people like me were like, well, what do I do then? Now, I was fortunate enough that I was in a position to just go, well, sod it then, I'm going to roll my sleeves up and just carry on with what I'm doing. You know, you've never helped me before, why do I want you to help me now, kind of thing. But I, you know, I had to kind of stay off social media because it was actually becoming quite a dark place. I was seeing a lot of entrepreneurs in a lot of pain over what the banks were doing. And, you know, there was a really naughty thing that the HSBC did, for example. I probably shouldn't name them, but I will, because they really annoyed me. The bounce back loan is 100% government backed, and it's not supposed to have any sort of credit checks associated with it because it's government backed. But HSBC, you had to have a feeder account, like this temporary account, to apply for the loan. And you had to pass a full credit check for you and your business to be able to get the account to apply for the loan. So all of these entrepreneurs who kind of have, like, let's say they have individual businesses and they might have a company credit card, or they've got this one and the other, or maybe they've pumped all of their money into their business. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of us have done that. So their credit isn't looking so great. Yeah, they were being told, off you go. We're not interested in giving you this. And they were mass declining people by the rates of thousands a day. And people were going, well, now what do I do? That was literally my only option. And the government saying, hey, great, we've got this support here for you. And thousands of small entrepreneurs and startups are going, really? Well, how do we access it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a whole other podcast here on this and how it's been handled. And yeah, I think, and I'm quite heavily involved in the fintech world as well. And there's a lot to say. It's probably that can be left another day. So, okay, last question for you.
Shoot.
It's a question I ask everyone. If you could go back in time 20 years and give advice to your younger self, what advice would you give yourself?
If I could go back 20 years and give myself some advice, just one piece of advice.
I guess you were just 20 years ago, you were in the middle of
podcasting. I was 20 years ago, I was a footballer. So that's how long ago that was. Okay, so if I was going back 20 years to give myself the advice, this is the advice I'd give myself, because I love this piece of advice and I follow it every day. Make more decisions with your heart and less with your head, because your head doesn't know any more than you do.
That is actually very wise, I've got to say that. I'm sure there's a lot of... that actually raises a lot more questions. I'd love to know what was behind that. But I guess we have to leave it there, otherwise we'll keep going for hours. Thanks a lot for that, Phil. It's been great speaking to you.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Cheers.